Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, we are known here in the U.S. as a nation of consumers. We love our shops. But next time you go shopping, I think you'll see things a little differently after hearing from my first guest. Dr. David Lewis is known as the father of neuromarketing. He'll join us in just a moment to shed some light on a question he raises in his book. Are we shopping in a golden age or Orwellian nightmare? Well, we'll find out more about that in just a moment. Ending today's show, whether it's a multi-million dollar contract or whether you're simply deciding where to meet for lunch, life is filled with negotiations. And veteran negotiator Eldonna Lewis-Fernandez says negotiations are a lot like a chess game, except you're looking for a win-win situation. And she'll share how to avoid the seven most common negotiating mistakes. But first up, Dr. David Lewis. He's a chartered psychologist and the co-founder and director of research at the Mind Lab International. He's known as the father of neuromarketing, as I said. And why? Because he does pioneering studies on analyzing brain activity for research and commercial purposes. He's the author of more than 30 books, including The Soul of the New Consumer, and his latest, The Brain Cell, When Science Meets Shopping. Dr. David Lewis, welcome.
Hello, good morning.
Very pleased to have you joining us from Sussex in England. And I said to you before we started here, fascinating work that you do. But, you know, some of the information in this book is also quite scary. How did you become so interested in what drives us to buy and how marketers can sell?
Well, as you were saying in your introduction, consumerism, shopping, is the mainstay of our economy at the moment. And also for many millions of people, it's a huge pleasure. I divide shopping into kind of two forms. There's what I call going shopping and there's doing the shopping. Now, doing the shopping means just going out and really buying all the stuff you have to keep body and soul together. So, you know, if you've got a cat, it might be buying cat litter. If you've got a baby, it might be buying nappies. You know, you might be buying bleach or whatever. These are not things people really get a big kick out of buying. They just have to buy them. So that's doing the shopping. Mm-hmm. But going shopping is probably the major leisure activity of our age. People enjoy going shopping. They look forward to it. They want excitement. They want stimulation. Maybe if they're, you know, live in the suburbs and they don't see very many people, going shopping in a big shopping mall enables them to meet other people, to socialize. It's a big socializing event. Now, what I was interested in, I really started out in clinical psychology, and I was very interested in looking at the subconscious responses of many of my patients. And from that, I kind of was asked by various commercial organizations if the techniques which I developed for analyzing subconscious thoughts kind of in the clinic could be applied to trying to better understand the consumer, understanding what she or he wanted, understanding what motivated them to buy, and especially what motivated them to make a decision to buy a particular product. Let's say, why did they buy brand A rather than brand B?
Right.
Now, in traditional market research, you just ask people. You have surveys, you stop people in the streets and ask them to fill in questionnaires, or you run what are called focus groups. These get to the kind of conscious decisions, but most of our shopping most of our purchases are made subconsciously. So we don't actually have access to the emotions and the motives which drive us to make particular purchases.
Right. And this book is about how the new mind sciences and the persuasion industry are coming together to sell us even when we don't think we're being sold. And I want to begin with a story that, honestly, I had to read twice because I felt sure I'd misread something and that you were citing a tale from a science fiction movie in your book. And you probably know what that is. It's right in the introduction of the book, and it begins with this. Imagine taking a journey by train or coach and resting your head wearily against the window, which we do when we travel. Immediately, you hear an advertisement that seems to come from inside your head, a voice which appears to be located behind your eyes and between your ears. Would you continue that story for us?
Well, this is a new technology. It's been experimented with. I don't think it's ever been rolled out as a commercial technique, and I think it would meet a lot of consumer resistance if it was. But nonetheless, it does work. Essentially, what they do, they are able to transmit sound through the glass of the window, and so they can send either a kind of a completely kind of a broadcast message, like you might get when you watch your TV, or what I think is kind of even spookier for me, is that there are now billboards. Again, this is experimental work, but I think it's going to hit a main street near you before too long, which will actually recognize you. Well, it won't recognize you as an individual. It'll know whether you're a man or a woman, and it will know what approximately what age you are, because it will do this by essentially capturing a photograph of you, let's say while you're standing waiting for a bus, and then it will use facial recognition software to know what sex you are, as I say, what approximate age. And then it will put up an advertisement which is designed for that particular demographic. So, you know, if you're a young guy, you probably are not very interested in an advertisement for intended for a young woman or the other way around. So that's where we are at the moment. That's being done. There are some sites in Japan where this is being done. But I think what is going to come within the next 5 years or so is the computer will then go to your social media. So it won't just recognize you, Vicky, as a woman.
Right.
It will recognize you, Vicky, as Vicky.
Right.
And it will know if you have a Facebook page, for example, your likes and dislikes. And it will then pitch an advertisement to you, which is designed specifically for you rather than for any kind of any woman in your age range or any guy.
I'm wondering if anybody really likes this. I'm so against it that I can't wrap my head around anybody liking it, but I'm sure that some people do.
Well, I think the reason I wrote the book, the book is kind of in a follow-up from a book which was published in America in the 50s, I think, by an American journalist, you probably heard of him, called Vance Packard.
Right.
And he wrote a book called The Hidden Persuaders. And this was really talking about how, in those days, techniques taken from Freudian theory and Freudian analysis were being used to pitch advertisements and make them very influential, very persuasive. Now, I think Vance Packard would turn in his grave if he could see what the hidden persuaders are in our society, because they're everywhere. And one of the reasons I wrote the book was to kind of inform consumers about what is being done in their name. Now, I'm not saying there's anything sinister or wicked about it, and certainly retailers and advertisers and marketing people say, look, if you're going to send an advertisement to somebody, it makes sense to send them an advertisement for something which they actually want, you know, rather than something
right.
they haven't any interest in at all. So they could say, by doing this, you're actually saving them time. They're not being bombarded with a thousand commercials of products and services they have no interest in. But, you know, it's like when you go online, for example, to Amazon. And if you've bought a book from Amazon or a product from Amazon, their algorithm will tell them what you're likely to like. So they will say, people who bought this book also like this book.
Right.
Now, sometimes I find that quite helpful, you know, and I don't mind that.
I would agree with you on that. I find that helpful too. But, you know, as a writer, and you probably found this too, when you just put in random research that you're doing for an article or something.
Yes.
And then for the next 6 weeks, you're bombarded with these advertisements that you have no interest in.
Well, exactly so. And sometimes the algorithm, you know, can get it very wrong, and it can give you things you have no interest in. So you wonder, why on earth should I really think I was interested in this particular thing? But it's just, as I say, I think the technology is very good at the moment, but it's compared with what we're going to be seeing, you know, in 10 years' time or so. I think we ain't, as Al Johnson famously said, you know, in the jazz singer, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, you mentioned hidden persuaders, and so let's look at some of those. Some of those I think we probably know about, like color is a big persuader, smells.
Yeah.
I used to work in the banking industry, and years ago, maybe 20 years ago, I read that, you know, when people are stressed, smells calm them down, and so I bought this hand lotion, and all the employees would put it on to kind of calm everything down. What other... One other thing you said was that the power of personal touch.
Yes, that's right. What I look at in the book are the two things which are actually important to, let's say, a shopping mall or a big supermarket. These two things are awful jargony words, but they're what they call humanics and mechanics. So mechanics would be the kind of just the way the building is built, the way it's designed, the architecture, whether it's got a big gee whiz factor, whether it's a very awe-inspiring mall, as many of the malls in your country really are. You just go and you think, gosh, this is for somebody from the UK who's not kind of used to this, you just, wow, they've got a full-size replica of, I don't know, Columbus's boat and stuff like that. How do they do this? And so that's very magical. And, of course, Disney are the masters of mechanics, but they're also the masters of humanics. And humanics are the human interactions we get. Because basically, we like to interact with people who are friendly, who are helpful. I mean, an American friend of mine was telling me she'd just flown over the Atlantic. She arrived in Amsterdam in Schiphol Airport quite late at night. She was pretty lonely. She was all by herself, traveling all by herself. She's a journalist, so she's used to it. But nonetheless, and she met a very acute, nice, attractive young male salesman who was selling cosmetics. And, you know, she said, I spent an hour with him, and he was very friendly. And she said, I walked away having spent about $1,000 on cosmetics. But I was just almost paying for his company. But, you know, so I think the retailers realize how important it is to have people in the store who are able to deal with human beings. It's a great art. It's a great skill. But if you can do that, you know, people will respond in that way.
Right. Well, we need to take a quick break, Dr. Lewis. When we come back, I want to ask you, I want to talk about TV. And you have a whole chapter called When TV is Watching You.
Indeed.
So stay tuned. Dr. Lewis is my guest. His book, The Brain Cell, S-S-E-L, When Science Meets Shopping. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services, if you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Conversations Live is giving away books. from New York Times best-selling fiction to the latest from innovative thought leaders in business and psychology. To find out where, when, and how, like us on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and look out for posts titled Book Giveaway.
Proud to bring variety to your radio dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and I'm very pleased to have Dr. David Lewis with us. He's the chairman of MindLab International. His new book is called The Brain Cell, S-E-L, The Brain Cell, When Science Meets Shopping. And it's all about how neuroscience and the persuasion industry, as he puts it, are reading our thoughts, influencing our emotions, and stimulating us to shop. Like we need stimulating. But I wanted to talk about TV. And we were chatting in the break, and I said, you know, for a few years I did without television. I got rid of cable, so I could only watch basic, I think it was PBS at the time. And then when I got cable back, I thought, boy, I remembered doing a feature story on the big tobacco industry and how they said that cigarettes were a nicotine delivery system. And I looked at my TV and I thought, my TV is just a commercial delivery system. They've scattered a few programs in between.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, coming from the UK, where obviously we have commercial television, but the number of ad breaks we have are very limited by law. And I'm just staggered when I check into a hotel in the States and I just turn on the TV and it just seems to be wall-to-wall advertising. But, you know, you've got to understand as well that if you go into, let's say, a supermarket or a shopping mall, now you may think that you're going into a shop, but you're actually not, in a sense. You're going into a machine, and it's a machine which is designed to sell things to you. And it's designed by extremely talented people. A whole range of professional disciplines goes into it. Retail geographers, for example, advertising and marketing people, lighting experts, sound experts. I was at a meeting for a company, I can't name who it was, but it's what we call a fast moving consumer good company. And they were talking about designing a product for males. It's a male grooming product. It's going to sell for about $10 in the stores. And there were six people sitting around the table talking about this, and they all had PhDs. I mean, one was a theoretical physicist from Cambridge University. And there were mathematicians, and there was a woman who was a specialist in what is called biomimetics, which is actually looking at nature and copying nature into kind of artificial into design. And I just thought, my goodness, you know, this is the kind of high-power intellectual gathering you get if you're kind of deciding the fate of the world, and they're talking about a male grooming product. So I was quite amazed by the amount of money and effort which goes into it. And I think a lot of consumers don't realize just how clever and how much money is going into selling them things. And, you know, they would only make that investment if they knew it worked, and it does work.
Yes. I saw years ago a Frontline documentary, which are quite serious documentaries, and they had brought over the car companies. It was when SUVs first came out, and there was a lot of grumbling about, oh, you know, they use too much fuel. So they flew this psychologist over from France. I don't recall his name. You probably are familiar with him. Paid him a $7 fee to come up with one word that was going to sell SUVs to Americans. And that word, after much, you know, research and focus groups and testing, was dominance. Domination.
Yeah.
So it happens. So let's talk about one of the chapters in the book is called When TV is Watching You. And, you know, there's a horror of horrors, a television reality show. I think we hit a new low. When this came out, it was called The People's Couch, where people sit and they watch television and you are watching them watch television. And I thought, this is never going to last. Well, guess what? They extended their airtime.
Yeah.
But tell us what you are talking about.
Scientists watch consumers when they're watching television. They install it with their permission. They don't do anything covert, but they install cameras in their homes. They sometimes install cameras actually in the television set itself, as I understand it. Or they put small cameras in the room. So they're actually looking at what the people are doing. They're You know, people, I think a lot of advertisers in the past, when they were a bit naive, used to think that the kind of nuclear family, mother, father and two kids, would sit watching television and they would sit there for 4 or 5 hours, whatever it was, and they wouldn't move and they wouldn't get out and they wouldn't, you know, and nothing could be further from the truth. People are very busy when they're watching television. These days they're very often operating mobile devices as well. They're on their iPads or their tablets, they're on their phones, they're often tweeting other people about the programs while they're watching them. They're drinking beer, they're drinking coffee, they're getting up, they're walking around, they're doing some most amazing things. I mean, our laboratory doesn't do this work, but I have seen the photography done by in various households around the UK, and the people are really extraordinary. You wonder if they're paying any attention to the programs at all. And I have to say, sometimes the programs are just not worth paying attention to, so you probably are better off playing on your tablet.
Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to talk about was subliminal messaging, because you say we're often very confused about this. So what is it and what isn't it?
Okay, well, this was a very famous case in the States. In 1950s, a man called James McDonald Vickery, who was a market research chap who ran his own company, claimed to have installed in a movie theater in Fort Lee in New Jersey a device which projected an image or two images onto the screen every 5 seconds, but so briefly that people couldn't consciously see it. And one said, "Eat popcorn," and the other said, "Drink Coke," okay? And he claimed at a press conference that this increased the sales of both the Coke and the popcorns because people were being subliminally conditioned to want to buy them. I have to say this created an absolute hysteria among the American media. I mean, people were just saying ridiculous things, that both Vickery and his device should be strapped to the next H-bomb when it was being tested and stuff like that. It really went over the top. But basically, a subliminal message is something you are never going to be consciously aware of, because it happens too fast for you at a conscious level to see it. But subconsciously, you are aware of it. So that's subliminal message. It's not inserting a single frame into a film, so it flashes up. But you can actually sometimes see these. This is what we call paraliminal persuasion. But for years and years, the advertising industry denied they ever used subliminal advertising. And a lot of psychologists said it was impossible. More recently, they've been doing studies which actually show you are influenced. Very, very briefly, I'll tell you one experiment which was carried out in Amsterdam. They got people to work on a computer program where they had to identify lowercase letters in a string of letters went across the screen. Let's say all capital B's, and then there would be a small b, and they'd have to press the key when they saw it. Now, what they weren't aware of was they were actually having a message flashed up at them saying, "Drink Lipton's iced tea," right?
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, after they'd done this task, they were given a very salty sweet. It's a very popular sweet in Holland called a druppe, and it's very salty. And they were asked to try and identify the name printed on the sweet with their tongue. In fact, what the researchers wanted them to do was to make them thirsty. And they then offered them either a bottle of water or Lipton's iced tea to quench their thirst. And those who'd been subliminally primed with the message, "Drink Lipton's iced tea," wanted Lipton's iced tea rather than water, although they couldn't really explain why. So it actually does work. Whether it's being used, I think, is illegal in most countries. And I think, you know, the amount of damage it would do to a brand if they were exposed, as they would be, using this. I mean, there would be a tweet, a viral attack on them on social media. So I don't think they're using that. But what they are using, certainly, is just nudging you in a particular direction. Because even if you're not aware, I mean, there was a study done where they actually had fast food logos in the laboratory. But attention wasn't drawn to them. They were just around the laboratory and on the wall. And they found that when in the presence of these fast food logos, people became more impatient, less patient. They wanted everything done more quickly. So they kind of were being influenced by the fact that you go to a fast food restaurant, you want everything done quickly.
Yeah, interesting. Well, we touched a little on big data and how that's being collected. So if if we want to, nobody's going to be hidden from that now. But I mean, unless we're living on an island that we where we have nothing. But what can we do to, you know, minimize our exposure?
Well, I would say there are probably three simple things that we can all do. And the first thing, you know, is just to be aware of what's going on. You know, the old Latin motto, caveat emptor, let the buyer be aware. We really should be let the buyer be aware. So be aware of the fact that there are lots of highly paid people every time you go to the store trying to sell you stuff. And not all the stuff they're trying to sell you is good for you. I mean, I'm writing a book at the moment on obesity. And so been looking a lot at how high fat, high sugar, high salt products are sold and how the kind of persuasion industry makes us think it's okay to you know, overconsume on these, because obesity is a worldwide pandemic. So be aware of how the tricks are being made. I remember I made a film for the BBC some years back, and we stopped people outside a supermarket when they were coming out of the supermarket, and I said to them, did you buy anything you didn't intend to buy when you went in? And we talked about 40, you know, Vox Pops, and we stopped about 30 people, and they all said, all but one said, oh, yeah, well, I bought these picture frames because they were on offer, or I bought this. Mm-hmm. They're cacti. They bought crazy things on impulse, right? And the only person, well, there was one man I stopped, a man in his middle age, and I said, do you buy anything on impulse? He said, nope. I make a list before I go in, and I stick to it. And I said, well, you're quite an unusual shopper. And he said, no, I'm a supermarket manager, and I know all the tricks. So be aware, you know, there are ways, they have ways of making you buy.
Love it.
I think awareness helps. And also, coming back to, you know, to social media, I would be much more cautious about personal details, anything I put. You know, you're not communicating between friends. You're actually communicating to the world at large.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people out there do not have your best intentions at heart. They, your best wanting to help you. They actually want to help themselves. They want to increase their bottom line on profit. So I would be aware of that and perhaps not disclose too much about myself, which I would be ashamed for my mother to hear, sort of thing, you know?
Right, right.
And I think the final thing, and it's only a small thing, but and it comes back to eating again. And I know a lot of people will know this and say I'm teaching my granny to suck eggs, but you should never, ever go shopping for food when you're hungry. It's really a disaster. We did a study where we actually got two groups of people. We kept them at a job all day, a psychological task. We gave one group 370 calories of snacks to enjoy, and the other group were just not allowed to eat anything, so they were very hungry. We sent them out shopping. We gave them some money. And we found that those who were hungry when they went shopping bought, on average, something like 2,500 calories worth of food, whereas those who weren't hungry bought 700 calories worth.
Wow,
you know?
What a difference.
And the ones who were hungry not only bought higher calorific items, but they also bought much more fatty items. They had bought the amount of fat that was 400% more than the group who weren't hungry. So just have a snack before you go shopping and you probably save yourself a lot of money.
Yes, it sounds like it. A couple of facts I wanted to share real quick, just to show we need to be careful about what we read too. In the US and UK, you said there are 4 PR executives for every journalist, which is shocking. And in the US, the average viewer spends 20 years of their life in front of TV, even if they are dabbling on their smartphone. In the UK, the average viewer spends 13 years of their life in front of the TV.
I'll tell you another quick factoid. By the age of 10, the average American child knows 400 brands.
Wow.
And by the age of 14, they are actually brand specific and see brand as part of the person's personality. So they judge a person's personality at the age of 14 on what brands they're wearing, what trainers they're wearing, what, you know, what mobile phones they've got, on brand. Brand is really part of the American and increasingly the European child's birthright.
Right. Well, Dr. David Lewis, this is fascinating stuff. I challenge anybody to read this and not see things a little differently. The book is called The Brain Cell, When Science meets shopping. And, you know, I mean, I've done my fair share of copywriting and writing television commercials, and it's useful for me in my work too.
That's nice, Vicky.
So, and listeners can find out more about this at the-braincell.com.
The-braincell.com.
All right. Dr. David Luce, pleasure talking with you. Let me know when your new book comes out. Enjoyed talking with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Vicky. Bye-bye.
And the book again is called The Brain Cell, When Science Meets Shopping. Please do stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about something that most people don't enjoy doing. But if we know how to do it well and avoid the pitfalls, we can probably improve a lot of things in our life. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay with us.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Hi, I'm Charlie. I fight fires and I save lives.
My name's Renee. I'm a cardiologist. I save lives.
My name's Anthony. I'm an EMT. I save lives.
You don't have to be a professional to save a life. Firefighters, doctors, and others save lives. You can too. Don't wait. To learn more about the warning signs and how you can help prevent suicide, visit save.org. In a crisis, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Burlingame Veterinary Consulting, we cover the world of animals. This week, September 28th, at Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. Christy Legale hosts a show along with Sarah Case from Posado Safe Haven. They'll have Josh Balk from HSUS with huge news about the welfare of farm animals and a visit with the religious animal blog, allcreatures.org. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Get current weather, traffic, and news. Visit 1150kknw.com and stay informed with Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And, you know, one of the things that many people, I know some people who are pretty powerful in their jobs and still don't like to do this, and that is negotiate. It puts the fear of you-know-what into some people. And so we're going to talk today with an expert on that. She is veteran negotiation and contracts expert, Eldonna Lewis-Fernandez. She's got over 30 years of experience crafting killer deals, both stateside and internationally, many of her negotiations in excess of $100 million. She's currently the CEO of Dynamic Vision International, which specializes in consulting, and it's a specialized consulting and training firm that helps individuals hone negotiation skills. She's also a keynote speaker, session leader, and panelist on the art of negotiation, and the author of Think Like a Negotiator. Eldonna Lewis-Fernandez, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Vicky. Thanks so much for having me.
And so you've written a book called Think Like a Negotiator. And I, since I haven't read it, I just want to, you know, let listeners know I have not read the book. But we're here today to talk about something you've spent all of your career doing, and that is negotiating. So and we're going to focus in particular on how to avoid those seven most common negotiating mistakes. But I have a question to ask you first, because you spent 30 years in the military. How come you didn't just retire and go play? How come you started a consulting firm and are continuing with negotiation?
Well, with my experience in the military and then my time in the corporate world, I found that, and now as a speaker and trainer, I just love speaking and training. I do a 3-day training. I speak a lot on negotiation. I just love to help people get these tools in their hands, because it's not something that's commonly used or commonly, I guess, people don't become experts at it in the common arena. And seeing so many people fall to some of these pitfalls as I start talking to them, and it's like, wow, I can really do something to help a lot of people. Now, I do still go out and play at times, but I'm really passionate about helping people become better negotiators.
Yeah, I think it's such an important skill, because, you know, we hear all the time that women make less money than men. Well, you know, one of the primary factors in that situation is that women don't like to negotiate, or maybe aren't as effective on the whole as men at negotiating. They don't want to seem pushy. And so negotiation is something I think we should be taught as children.
I agree. And what you're talking about with women versus men. Now, I was in a male-dominated environment pretty much my entire life. My mother died when I was 12, so I've been kind of. And I think men, more so than women, men are direct communicators, where women are more indirect, and we're not taught to really step up and ask for what we want. So it feels very uncomfortable at times. It feels confrontational, which is why people shy away from it, primarily women. And it's something that can be turned around, just needs a little bit of training and experience.
Yeah. So that's a good segue into the first common mistake that we make, and that is lacking confidence. And some people, you say, will try and, you know, puff up that lack of confidence with bravado and go too much the other way. So talk to us a little bit about how we should present ourselves on a confidence level.
Well, you can always see if somebody has confidence and if it's kind of genuine, versus some people, sometimes they have to throw their weight around, or they get very loud or kind of bullying type of a thing. But if you just have general confidence, that comes from within. Part of it's your inner game. And, you know, if you haven't done work there, you may need to do some work. But on the other hand, it also comes from experience. Confidence in something that you're doing comes from the experience that you have, and the only way to get experience and feel more confident is to actually do it, unfortunately. We can't just flip a light switch and become an expert.
Right. So you talk about hot buttons that will resonate with our opponent or the person we're trying to negotiate. So what are we looking at for there?
Well, it's kind of, you're looking to see things that maybe you can connect with somebody on, and you have to push back in a certain way, and that kind of goes into reading people and seeing how they're reacting to what you're talking about. Like if it's a big negotiation, you're talking about a whole lot of different elements, cost elements, and maybe structure of the proposal and different technical aspects of it. You can kind of see if you're going down piece by piece, but if it's just kind of maybe one thing, you may just kind of have to read them and lead them a little bit and see if you can kind of get to a common ground and, mm-hmm. and maybe hit those things that will resonate and build some rapport.
Yeah. And I think, you talk about this in your release here, but I think what's helped me a lot when I've gone into negotiations is having the facts there. We don't want to just talk about facts and figures, but when I know that I've got those there in my head, it gives me more confidence to start negotiations.
Oh, definitely. It's all about being prepared in advance, which is another tip in my book. The time to be prepared for the negotiation is not when you're sitting down across from the person. You need to have done some research, verified the facts, just looked at their end, what they're presenting, and make sure what they're presenting is, you know, that you understand it and that you have counters, and you've thought through maybe what they might come back with, and so you can respond to that. And that also even goes for a job interview. I was recently interviewed on Fox Business about that, about how to be prepared for the job interview, thinking of things that they might say to you. So it's always going in with that preparation, which also helps them building confidence.
Yes, definitely. Number two, one of the most common mistakes is thinking something is non-negotiable. And when I was reading this, I thought back to when I was a little kid and my dad would go to his ophthalmologist in England, and he would tell him, okay, this is what you need. And this is, you know, my dad always had expensive taste, and, you know, here's the price of your glasses. And my dad would, I'm not paying that. You give me a better price. I know you can give me a better price. So he would even negotiate the price of his glasses. So tell us when something's negotiable. You know, what kind of clues will tell us when we can negotiate on a price and when we can't?
Well, I always just kind of go for it. And there's times when I don't. It's kind of like, oh, I just really don't want to. I negotiate all the time, and I don't really want to deal with it. Sometimes I feel guilty about doing that. But even in retail, I get discounts off of retail. I'll ask, well, is there a discount? Do you have any coupons? What do you have that you can give me a discount? No, we don't have anything really. Well, I'm a military veteran. Do you have any discount there? Oh, yeah, we do have that. Sometimes you have to just keep asking. You have to continually ask about it. And I think everything, just about everything, is negotiable. Of course, there are a couple of things here and there, but over the overall scheme of things, everything's negotiable, and it's all about thinking like a negotiator and having that mindset.
Yes, yeah. I love that you say powerful negotiators are rule breakers, because, you know, we get locked into this mentality of, well, you know, those are the rules, I need to play by the rules, and if we don't ask, we don't get.
Well, yeah, like I always say, I heard one of my mentors, Clinton Swain from Frontier Training, say rules are made for the masses. See, if we don't have rules, rules keep everything from going into chaos. So everybody has to go the direction of the rules. But rules are also breakable. That doesn't mean that you have to follow the rules. You can find a way to go around the rules. Obviously not saying breaking laws, but there are rules of things. Oh, okay, this is the order that we go in, and we go this way. Well, how about this? Is there a shortcut over here? Is there some other way I can go over there?
Right.
You just have to get creative with it.
Yeah, think outside the box. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about relationships and the importance of building those relationships before we go into negotiations wherever possible. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Aldona Lewis Fernandez. And we're talking about the seven most common negotiating mistakes and how you can avoid them and how you can become more comfortable negotiating. Please do stay tuned. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Pause has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at pause.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Talk radio with a difference. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Well, we are talking in this segment with veteran negotiation and contracts expert Eldonna Lewis Fernandez, talking about something that many people don't like to do or fall short on by their own admission, and that is negotiating. We've determined, yes, it does put the fear of you-know-what into many people, and so they just avoid it. But what we're talking about here is the 7 most common negotiating mistakes and how to avoid them and how to get comfortable negotiating. So very pleased to have Eldonna Lewis Fernandez with us. She's had over 30 years of experience working on huge multi-million dollar contracts. So we're in good hands here. And not only that, she rides a Harley. I've just remembered during the break. So it's got to be good stuff. So we're going to talk here about one of the biggest mistakes is not building relationships first. And so in some cases, we can't do that. But there are things that we can do if we're meeting for the first time that kind of create that connection. So can we look at a couple of those?
Well, yeah, if you again, going back to the being prepared in advance, if you can find out something about the person and see if you can have some type of affinity where you can build a connection. Speaking about the Harley, I'm getting ready to lead a women veteran support group at my church, and I went in to speak to the support group pastor, and it was a little nerve-wracking because I was going in for the interview, and I looked, and he had a picture of a Harley on his desk, and I asked him if he rode. Instant affinity. We spent 20 minutes talking about Harley. it was great. So if you can find that affinity with somebody to build that connection, that's a great way to start.
And if you are selling, and somebody told me this many, many years ago because I didn't have any photographs in my office, and I said, well, I like to be professional. And they're like, well, put a little something personal in here because it creates a connection with somebody when they come into your office. And so I did, and I put a couple of family photos and a picture of my dog. And, of course, the dog always got the attention. but it did create, an icebreaker there. Sometimes that's all we need to create a connection.
Yeah, definitely. When I was deployed to the Middle East, they do all their business by relationships. You better not talk business until you've had a conversation for at least 45 minutes.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's something we're quite bad at here on many levels because, you go to a network meeting and the first thing somebody does is, without even knowing who you are, shove a business card at you. So,
yeah, you don't know if they're your right fit client. You need to take some time to get to know people and listen to them, and you'll be able to hear whether or not they're your right fit client. I only tell people, if they ask me what I do, I say, show people how to think like a negotiator. If that piques an interest, we'll have a further conversation. But I usually ask something like, where are you from? Where'd your name come from? What's your favorite me time activity? I want to know something about them.
Yeah, yeah. So a big, big, big mistake, too, is not asking for what you want. And again, I think that's something that maybe women are a little bit more prone not to do because, we don't want to seem pushy. But I think one of the key things for me, anyway, is important before I go into negotiations to establish in my mind what I want, what I will accept, what I won't accept, because I don't want to be thinking about that in the middle of a negotiation.
Yeah, you have to decide what your walkaway point is, what you're willing to go down to for your bottom line, whether it's cost or terms and conditions. But you're right. Women tend to not ask. We're taught not to ask, not to speak up. So it's about asking, and oftentimes it's fearing that rejection, that no. People say no three times before they say yes, so you got to expect some no's, and you got to just keep going back around. If you want it bad enough, you got to find another way to ask.
Yeah. I just actually ran into this a couple of weeks back with somebody, and I was trying to get hold of somebody in a desperate situation, and it was pretty desperate with a client situation. We'd been let down by somebody, and I got hold of this person after many phone calls, and he said, well, I'm sorry, it's just too short notice. So I'm like, okay, well, what's it going to take to make it, you know, more palatable for him? And we very quickly came to an agreement, you know, to a good compromise. And that's what we're looking for, is that win-win.
Definitely. And I actually just did a post about this where both sides feel good about it. That's what win-win is, where I feel good about the interaction and so do you. We walk away feeling good about that.
Yeah, yeah. Mistake number five, talking too much. So we can go the opposite extreme. We can just sit there and not ask, and then we can talk too much. So what are we talking about here?
Well, oftentimes people will talk you maybe into a sale or into the deal, and then they'll keep talking, and they just won't shut up, and they'll talk you right back out of it. Using the power of silence, if you can get uncomfortable with the discomfort of silence, he or she who speaks next usually concedes in the negotiation. So when you get to a point where you're going back and forth and you put out your final point, you just need to sit there and be quiet. And that silence sometimes is so painful that somebody's going to fill it. If it's not you, you're probably going to come out the winner.
Yes, I like you say there's an old adage that says he or she who speaks next loses.
Right, exactly.
And people are uncomfortable with silence many times, but I have found that a very useful when I'm looking for a talent, an interviewing technique when I'm looking to hire somebody, not on air, obviously we don't want silence. But if you just have a little feeling that something's off or you're not quite sure, that silence can sometimes open up a big doorway for you.
Well, what's interesting is every time that I speak, I teach on these as well. And I'll come out with that point, and I'll say, talking too much, and then I will just stand there and be quiet. And somebody always either laughs or tells me, you can talk now. Somebody, every time, says something. I've yet to speak and have that silence not be answered by the audience.
Right, right. That's interesting. So number six is not documenting. It seems common sense that yes, and number seven kind of ties into that because it's signing without reading, but you know, those seem common steps, but you know, and I've seen people do a gentleman's handshake on it, and these days I don't, unless you know somebody very well, I don't think that's a good way to go.
Exactly. The handshake is fine as long as you follow it up in writing, because what you think I said and what I think you said are usually two different things.
Mm.
And putting it in writing, reducing your conversations to writing, and then reading the documentation before you sign it, it clears up the ambiguity and it makes it a lot smoother. Written contracts are really just for protection, to protect both parties. And to make sure it's clear on what's said, I always use the example of, okay, somebody, we're going to talk at 7 o'clock tonight. We go away, and it's kind of like, okay, you're going to call me, I'm going to call you, and we're sitting there at 7 o'clock, nobody's calling, and both sides are getting ticked off. Well, if somebody would have just said, I'll call you at 7, the other person could say, okay, I'll wait for your call at 7. You have that even in a text message. You have clarity. Clarity of terms is very important and erases the ambiguity there.
Yes. And then, of course, the last one is signing without reading. Don't ever, ever sign. I am very comfortable at making people wait while I read documents before I sign them, because I did get ripped off once by signing something. I signed a petition in a street and I didn't look underneath. And there was a standing, I forget what it was now, but it led to something else and money coming out of my account that shouldn't have come out, but it was many, many years ago. So sign what we read, final word, right?
Exactly, because if you don't know what you're signing, if you don't really look at it. I was at an Emmy viewing party once, and there was somebody who was taking video of somebody who was going for a reality show, and then her assistants came up and wanted me to sign this five-page legal-sized document. I couldn't read the stuff. I argued with them. I took it home. I looked at it. One of the paragraphs said, "Forevermore, your image and likeness can be used in any way, including a negative, derogatory
right,
manner."
Right. That's not, yeah.
Yeah.
Good job. Good job you caught that. Well, Aldona Luz Fernandez, thank you so much for being with us. I know your book is called Think Like a Negotiator. Listeners can find out more about Aldona and her work at thinklikeanegotiator.com. thinklikeanegotiator.com. Some good advice there. And she does blog quite regularly up there, so there's quite a bit of information for you to go check out. And I want to thank each of you for joining us today. Appreciate you spending this hour with us on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. You can find me at 800-495-7617 if you have questions or comments on today's show, or info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for being with us. Until next week, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.